There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
Time to get you dialed into the biggest stories of the day. This is the Daily 10 with Matt Chernoff.
All right, everybody, here we go. It's time for the Monday edition of the Daily 10, and we're going to call this one the Winning 10. Why? Because all we have to talk about is a bunch of wins, which is a nice change of pace around here. This is the only podcast for Atlanta folks, by Atlanta folks, on all the stuff you care about the most. And I know you care about a lot of wins when the local teams put together a weekend like we just had. We'll get to all of the football coming up in a second, but let's start with the baseball, where the Braves and the Brewers will play game 307 first pitch in series today at Truist Park with a 107 first pitch. The weirdness about the start of this game, both the Braves and the Brewers had to wait to the finale last night, or the final of the Astros and the White Sox, to know if they were playing at 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock, but White Sox won, which means the Braves and the Brewers will play at 107 today at Truist Park with the series tied at 1. Braves are coming off that 3-0 win in Game 2 on Saturday. I mean, what can you say about Max Fried? That was just dominance. That's one of the most dominant Braves postseason pitching performances I've seen in recent memory. Like, it took you back to the Smoltz, Glavin, Maddox type stuff. Max was 6 innings, 3 hits, no walks. He struck out 9. He was really never in trouble in the game, which is why I thought he should have stayed in the game at least another inning, which I'll talk about more in a minute. The Braves' pen, while I will give them credit, they got themselves in trouble and then out of trouble in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning of that game Saturday. The Brewers brought the tying run to the plate in all 3 innings, which is a very dangerous game to play if you're the Braves. But again, give Matzik credit, Will Smith, they all got key outs, and I think there were 6 different opportunities with the tying run up where Matzik and Smith wheeled off the hook. All told, the bullpen saw Luke Jackson give you two-thirds of an inning, gave up just 1 hit and struck out 2. Tyler Matzik, an inning and a third, a hit, a walk, and 3 Ks, and he got nasty when he needed to. And then Will Smith, of course Will Smith had to give, you know, Brave fans a reason to get concerned in the 9th inning with a walk and a base hit, but then he settled in, got a pop-up and a double play, and the Braves won that game. So back to Max's performance, because I think this leads into something with Ian today that we should pay attention to. I told you Max had one of the more dominant efforts we've seen from a Braves pitcher in the postseason in forever. I saw this note from MLB Metrics that Max is the first pitcher in Braves playoff history to come up with 9 strikeouts, give up no earns or no walks in a postseason start. Now, again, this is a Braves franchise that had 3 Hall of Famers on the same staff, and none of them were ever able to give you a start in playoff history, 9 strikeouts, no earned runs, and no walks. That's how good he was. So I thought the most intriguing and maybe frustrating part of the first 2 games of this series with the Braves and the Brewers is Snit and Rick Kranitz's decisions when it came to how they handled both Charlie Morton and Max Fried near the end of their starts. They have a good feel for this stuff, or at least they're supposed to. But me watching from hundreds of miles away saw that Charlie Morton on Friday started to lose his command early in the 6th inning. He started to have problems locating in that inning. And if not for a Brewers offense that was, I thought, lacking in patience, there's a chance Morton would have gotten himself in a lot more trouble in the 6th. But to Charlie's credit, he got out of it. Same thing started in the 7th inning when he hit the leadoff hitter on a 1-2 pitch because he couldn't locate and lost his command. Then he threw a fastball middle-middle to Rowdy Tellez that the ball still hasn't landed. So I can make a great case that I thought Mort was done even as good as he was after 6 innings. Then flip it, though, in Game 2. Max was rolling. No stressful pitches. He only had 1 runner in scoring position, I think, in the 6 innings and followed it with a strikeout. He was at 81 pitches. I thought Max, again, was in full control to come out for the 7th inning. But I think what happened the day before with Charlie Morton affected Snit and Rick Kranitz's decision, which I don't like that philosophy. Each individual pitcher, judge them on the way they're going, not on what happened the day before when Morton started showing you signs that he was losing some of the command and some of the location. Max gave you none of that. All in all, though, it worked out well. The Braves split the series, which is what you wanted to do in Milwaukee. So today it's Ian Anderson against Freddie Peralta, and I'll be intrigued to see how Snit and Kranitz handle Ian as he makes his way the third time or so through this Brewers lineup. The good news is Ian comes in with a lot of postseason experience already. For even as young as he is, remember, he made four postseason starts a year ago, put up a 2-0 record, a 0.96 ERA, and he started Game 7 of the National League Championship Series against the Dodgers. Here's Ian, who talked about the fact that he doesn't have any jitters this time around because he's got the playoff experience from a year ago.
Yeah, I think I'll be a little bit more comfortable. You know, there's not going to be those first-time nerves, kind of, because I did go through it last year and, you know, got that experience. So I think it's going to be just kind of channeling that energy from the crowd and not getting too overhyped and kind of just sticking to my game and kind of what those two guys did.
The other thing I think to watch today is because the Braves' pen pitched their share of stressful innings in the first two games, especially Matzik and Luke Jackson, how their usage goes today and tomorrow becomes a factor. Like, this will be the third time in 4 days that you're going to go to both those guys. And frankly, they're really the best and only late-game, high-leverage, traditional relievers the Braves have, unless they're going to use Waskari Noah. I don't see them using Drew Smyly, I don't think, in a high-leverage, late-game situation. So those two are going to get the bulk of the work. So how you use your starter affects what you're going to get out of them in Game 3 today at 107, and then Game 4 tomorrow at 507. A lot more on the Braves to get to over the next several days. It is a fun time of year for the postseason. If you're not going to the game, go check out the action at the Daily Draft. We're brought to you by the Daily Draft in downtown Woodstock on Main Street, right down there in Woodstock. It's a great sports bar experience. That's why it's not the deep-fried sports bars that you're used to with that menu of just not great choices. This is a chef-inspired menu. Wall-to-wall flat screens. This is one of the biggest screens in Metro Atlanta that you can enjoy the game. Add into it a self-serve tap option for you. Craft beer bar, billiards, darts, all the fun. Kids can enjoy it. Mom and dad can. Boys night. If you're going for playoff baseball or your Saturday or Sunday football, the Daily Draft downtown Woodstock should be your option. Go to thedailydraft.net to find out more. Ask about the tailgate box, the game day platter. Both will set you up for your football viewing experience. You can go to thedailydraft.net to find out more today. All right, let's get to the football. Georgia wakes up this morning as the new number one team in America following their 37-10 victory at Auburn on Saturday. They're now 6-0. Combine that with Alabama's loss at Texas A&M and what was a thrilling game Saturday night. And as I said, Georgia tops the polls. Stetson Bennett got the start for Georgia, and he was very efficient in the win. 14 for 21, 231 yards, couple of TDs. And the great Ladd McConkey is turning himself into quite the weapon. The freshman receiver had 5 catches, 135 yards, and a touchdown. Georgia also rushed the ball well in the game. They went over 200 yards rushing. And what do you know, Georgia's defense again was really good. Now, it's very spoiling to Georgia fans when I heard from some Georgia fans, it was a bummer we gave up a touchdown. Yeah, that's going to happen from time to time, but they held Auburn on the road to 10 points. They forced a turnover. They sacked Bo Nix 4 times, and they once again dominated the game. So while there's no prize given out on October 11th for being number one, it's still really cool. I mean, it's not as if Georgia's been number one a million times, that it's old hat, so enjoy that. It's a very cool place for Georgia to be. They'll host undefeated Kentucky coming up Saturday at 3:30 with a chance to add more to their resume. College Game Day has announced they will be in Athens again. This will be the third time they have been pregame for a Georgia game this season. The first one in Charlotte against Clemson. The second just a couple of weeks ago against Arkansas. Now this game against Kentucky. Georgia Tech also got into the win column Saturday. They beat Duke 31-27 with some late heroics, some fireworks to improve to 3-3 on the season. Jeff Sims, who just, I mean, you see the skill, the talent. You just continue to want to watch him develop and cut out some of the mistakes. But Sims made a huge throw at the end of this game with about a minute to go, a 36-yard touchdown pass to win it on a 3rd and 6. Sims finished the game with 297 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. He did have 2 picks, and those are the mistakes I'm talking about. But 55 yards rushing and a touchdown for Georgia Tech, who is off this week. Then they'll head to Charlottesville to face Virginia coming up October 23rd. And the winning weekend continued on Sunday. It was an early morning wake-up call for the Falcons, who played in London. They beat the Jets 27-20 to improve to 2-3 on the season. It's kind of where I thought they would be after five games. A couple of things from the win. That was the Kyle Pitts breakout game, and the timing couldn't have been more perfect. When you didn't have Russell Gage, you didn't have Calvin Ridley, you knew you had to, you know, spread the football out, and Pitts was a mismatch all day for the Jets. Nine catches, 119 yards, and the biggest mismatch came on his first career touchdown when the Jets had Kyle Pitts manned up with a defensive end. Good luck with that. Pitts had the one-handed catch. He had the deep post over the middle. You got a little bit of everything in the bag of Kyle Pitts. While I would expect the rookie season to continue to be some ebbs and flows, the ups and downs, you see all the excitement level in the unicorn that everybody saw at Florida. I think in year two, once he really goes through this first full campaign, I don't know what teams are going to do when he gets bigger, stronger, and understands what he's doing more to stop him, because he's a mismatch at all levels. The other guy that continued his good work was Cordarrelle Patterson. I'll continue to say what I've said for weeks now. He looks like the best free agent pickup, considering his value was a 1 year, $3 million deal. He gave you another 14 rushes, 54 yards, seven catches, 60 yards. He had 21 offensive touchdowns, 114 yards, and he makes so many key plays, first down pickups. He, again, is a mismatch for a lot of teams. What Arthur Smith has done with him has given you some idea of what Arthur's creativity is about. And I thought Arthur Smith called his best game as the Falcons head coach / offensive coordinator play caller. Again, playing without those two starting wide receivers, Matt Ryan was 33 of 45 for 342 yards and a couple of TDs. That's not something I would have seen coming heading into the game. Matt also became the seventh quarterback in NFL history to hit the 5,000 career completion mark, to add to what is looking like it's going to be a Hall of Fame career for Matt Ryan. So the Falcons now go into their bye week, a chance to get healthy. We'll see if Calvin Ridley returns, because we still don't know what the personal matter was. And we'll say the same thing we said on Friday. I hope everything's okay with him. I know the Falcons would certainly love to have him back. Russell Gage. Now you combine that with Cordarrelle Patterson, Kyle Pitts, Hayden Hurst, and you're like, okay, there are some weapons that can make this offense continue to grow. They will be back in action against the Dolphins in 2 weeks. And the Dolphins look pretty dreadful. That's a chance for the Falcons to get back to 500, and then they'll host the Carolina Panthers. So we'll see what happens again in a portion of the schedule that is very manageable. If you guys would, go ahead and hit the subscribe button for me. I'll wait. All right, thank you. Or also, you can hit the follow button wherever it is you get your favorite pods. We're available on all the podcast platforms, from Apple, the Stitcher, the Spotify, Google, you name it. You can find us in any of those places. And again, leave us a great five-star rating, maybe a review. Those would be appreciated. I'll be on the radio this afternoon after some Braves baseball on 680 The Fan in Atlanta. We're back again tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily 10.
Subscribe to The Daily 10 now and get the latest breaking news and biggest stories of the day every morning. Get more at 680thefan.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community, because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.